and welcome along to the latest edition of the Daggers and Lids podcast, your one-stop shop for everything that is women's cricket. I'm Charles Dagnall, Lydia Greenway alongside me, and it's early in the morning, Lyd. It is, we are recording, it is currently, as I speak, 8:07, but we have been up for far longer than that. And that is also one of the reasons why we're both wearing headwear, is that neither of us have got up early enough to actually do our hair. I think, is that fair?
It's very fair, because I actually washed my hair yesterday and I had it down all day and I thought, oh, I wonder if I wake up tomorrow and my hair's still going to look okay. So I looked in the mirror this morning and the answer was no, my hair does not look okay. So I went for a cap. You've gone for a flat cap, Daggers. You're just missing your wellies again.
I feel like I am sort of channeling my inner Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins.
Yes.
You know, been time. And I'm not going to be drawing any chalk murals out on the paving stones or anything like that. I wonder if it's the same in your house as it is in mine, where Asher, my partner, has 463 hair machines, from straighteners to this new thing from Dyson. Get it in time for Christmas. Here you go. Dyson, give us some money for this plug. But it's called something like an air up or something weird.
I know what you mean, yeah.
But the really great thing about it is that I get to hear the stories about what it does to the hair. And I'm there just sort of nodding along, going, oh, that's really good. So that's what, I don't know if it's the same in your household.
No, we've just got the standard hair dryer and straighteners, which is not fancy. I thought you were going to say the great thing about it is that you get to use it as well, but clearly that is not the case.
This front bit's fine and it masks what's going on in the back. I used to, though. I used to use straighteners when I had my long locks, yes.
You're going to have to put a picture into that.
Yes, yeah, I might avoid doing that, actually. but yes, it's one of those where I used to use the hair straighteners. Kept burning my neck, though. I wasn't used to it whatsoever. Asher is actually at the door giving me faces as I do that. You may hear her laughing as well. There you go. That's Asher, part of the podcast.
She's not happy.
We are building up, of course, to Christmas. Have you started your shopping?
Daggers, I haven't started it. I have finished it and the presents
are wrapped.
This is unprecedented. I've never done it before. I'm done. I've done the Christmas cards. What about you?
Oh my God, Christmas cards. No, I just said text messages. You know, we've got the family chat. Family WhatsApp. Merry Christmas, everybody. Yeah. Right, that's that done then.
Send all.
We do it with birthdays now. So, the family WhatsApp chat is, it's someone's birthday today. Thank God someone else has remembered and I'll put a message on there as well. I've done a little bit. I've done a little bit of Christmas shopping. We're not going big. It's going to be a nice, quiet Christmas. As long as daughter is sorted out, as long as partner is sorted out, then I'm pretty much done.
Fair enough.
So that is fair. So yes, we are building up to Christmas, and we will be talking in our next podcast and rounding up. By the time we're recording, two matches have been played in the South Africa England One Day International Series. Two matches have been played in the Australia versus India One Day International Series, and we are going to cover all of those series in full in our next podcast. So we'll have a roundup of that, and we'll also include as well Ireland versus Bangladesh. We know that has finished. Huge congratulations to Ireland on their 3-0 T20 International Series victory. We have not forgotten about that. We are not talking about it. We're going to be doing it in a lot more detail in our next podcast, which should be coming out at the end of the week, something like that. So please don't think we've forgotten it. We are doing it in full at a later date. But there is a very good reason for this podcast. Now, for a while, we have been trying to get Mel Jones on. She is a very, very busy woman. She, of course, former Australian international player. She is a world-class commentator and is in demand across the globe for her services, both in the men's and the women's game. But there is one subject in which she has a great deal of knowledge about, and has been greatly involved in, and that is the plight of the Afghanistan women's cricket team. Now, the basic history, and this is potted, there is a lot more to it than that. For those of you who are interested in the women's game, probably follow this, you probably know the story already. That said, so please indulge me just for a moment while I just go through this. Women in Afghanistan have been banned from sports since the Taliban regained control in 2021. They have urged the ICC for help to form a refugee team, with Amnesty International now adding support. So basically, in essence, women have been stopped not just playing sport, doing a wide variety of things. And the things that they have been banned from is eye-watering. I mean, this is genuinely eye-watering. And some of the examples, things like speaking in public, showing their faces in public, traveling alone, they're not allowed to drive, use smartphones, they're not allowed to go to parks and gyms, they are not allowed to go to high school and university. This is just a small sample of what is banned for women in Afghanistan. Now, the ICC, according to their rules, if you are a test playing nation, which Afghanistan are, part of the rules is that you have to have a women's side that is playing in competitive cricket in ICC competitions and being allowed to play. This we know is not happening. And the ICC haven't necessarily enforced those rules. They've allowed the men to carry on playing. Recently, there has been a interview done, and this is by Nick Holt of the Daily Telegraph, and it was with the outgoing ICC chair, Greg Barclay. He had some fairly strong things to say about a variety of different topics, lots of these didn't land particularly well to fans of women's cricket. I'm just going to go through some of them as well, and he says things about skeptical about the value of women's test cricket. This because the men's game is strongly supported. He doesn't believe that, and this we've spoken about before, that he doesn't believe that women's test cricket is the future for the game. But it's the Afghanistan issue which was the real eye-opener. He says it caused him the most grief during his tenure as ICC chair. The ICC did not ban Afghanistan when the board suspended its women's cricket program under pressure from the Taliban government. Many of the Afghan women's team have subsequently moved to Australia as refugees, something that was enabled by Mel Jones, who we're going to hear from in a few moments' time. And he believes that it's hypocritical of boards cancelling what we lost making series financially, but who still played Afghanistan in ICC World events. So basically, the men's team from Australia and the men's team from England are not going to play Afghanistan in alignment with the plight of the women, but he reckons it's hypocritical as well. Lydia, I'm sorry I've just spoken for a long time, but there is a lot more to it than that. But that is pretty much in a nutshell. We've not managed to speak to Mel until today about this topic. This is a topic that needs highlighting very, very regularly. And it's one that shouldn't have to be highlighted. We feel in the West, of course, we would feel this. But it is a horrible mess. And it seems like no one necessarily wants to try and get out of it at all.
It's amazing that the phrase that he's used is that the Afghanistan situation has caused him the most grief, as if it's such an inconvenience for him to have had to have dealt with.
I mean, you were pretty angry, weren't you?
Yeah, I am, because, well, for so many reasons. I think that the main one for me is, and call me a feminist, call me whatever you like, is if this was the other way round, there is no way that it would be going under the radar as much as it is for these women at the moment. And the Afghanistan women's cricket situation is going under the radar. You look at journalists and who decides to write on it, there's not a huge amount of journalists who have acknowledge the situation or really go out of their way to delve into the ins and outs of it. And it's only because some high profile people have decided to do something about it over in Australia that that it's still just about on our radar. But fundamentally, the ICC pointing the finger and saying that boards are picking and choosing about when they're going to play Afghanistan, that isn't the point. The point is there's a lot more that could have been done to support these women who have had to flee their country. And neither you or I can imagine what that feels like. And unfortunately, neither can the decision makers at the ICC, which ultimately is probably why they haven't done a huge amount about it. What about you?
Well, I find it interesting. I mean, call me a feminist if you're going to, if you know, in that respect, I can't agree more with what you're saying. And what really does frustrate me is that the former ICC chair is coming out and calling boards hypocritical, where it is actually not there. It is not for individual boards to take a stance necessarily on the subject. It should be under the jurisdiction of the ICC. Now, I'm sorry, but I have pretty stringent views on this, and again, I'll mention it a little bit later when we hear from Mel Jones. But for me, it's a very simplistic topic. It really is. You have a law within your rules that dictate that if you are a test-playing nation, that you have to that should be for men and for women. If it is not, if the women aren't part of that, then that's against the laws. I'm sorry, you get kicked out. And that may be too simplistic a view. And people will sort of say, oh, well, what about the Afghanistan men's thing? Well, that's just tough. If you don't take strong, drastic action against a board, then how can anybody say, what they're doing is fundamentally wrong? And this is a game, this is a sport. And I don't claim to know the ins and outs of politics within. Afghanistan or anything like that, and the beliefs that they may hold. But to me, this is just wrong on the highest of levels, and I will not fall from that perch. And again, people can call me names as much as they possibly want to. This is just plain wrong. For the outgoing chair, where this is on his watch, let's be right, this is on his watch, Greg Barclay, for him to call out boards saying they are hypocritical for not playing bilateral series against the Afghanistan men because the ICC, or he and the ICC, which is the guardians of our game, this is the governing body of our game, can sort of allowing this bending of the rules to allow the men to play, but to actually sort of park the women's issue whatsoever. To me, I'm shocked. I was actually really shocked reading this article in the Daily Telegraph. And I've got to congratulate Nick Holt for writing it, for doing the interview, and for putting it, because it did, the article did what it was supposed to do and cause a reaction. And I was just looking at it saying, he says, I think it would have been, our approach has been right. It would be easy to kick Afghanistan out, but their board haven't done anything wrong. They're just working under a decree and a series of laws that says this is what you have to do. I don't think it would make a jot of difference to the ruling party there to kick them out. So kick them out, because until there is that fundamental change. And look, maybe, I don't know. I don't know. It just, to me, and I will die on this hill, it's all plain wrong. This is wrong. But I'm sure I'd be happy to put in my place by someone else. Let's hear from Mel. We had a really great conversation. It was lovely to catch up with her. It's all very well us talking about what was said, but it's someone who is very much in the mix with the Afghanistan Women's Refugee Team over in Australia, is Mel Jones. We were lucky enough to catch up with her. And we actually asked her and gauged her reaction to what was said by Greg Barclay.
I might dumb down my reaction a little bit because just to say that you're frustrated and disappointed is probably the bare minimum. And I say that because in the time that we've been involved with this group of women, which was since the fall of the Taliban, they have been nothing but brave and resilient and collaborative and open doors, wanting to speak to people, wanting to have a conversation. And in return, we being the small group of us that helped get them out, have not once had a phone call or any kind of conversation with anyone from a leadership position across world cricket, bar Cricket Australia, who have been fantastically supportive. The MCC have been, and we're working quite closely with them at the moment in terms of future programming, things like that. But there has been absolute radio silence. So to hear those comments, you just sort of wonder why on a parting moment where you've just spent time being a leader of the ICC for so long and there's so many positive things going around, that you would decide to drill down on a negative comment like that, having a clip at Cricket Australia for not playing the Afghanistan men's team, when the messaging from this women's group right from the get-go was that they want to see the Afghanistan men's team play. They are so passionate about cricket and love watching the men's team play, but they just want to be heard. And they have not been heard since August 2021. And so, yeah, there's a mountain of frustration on that front.
Mel, could just give us a bit of a timeline? Because I know, like, you've been heavily involved in just trying to do what you can. So obviously, the Taliban came back into power in 2021.
Yeah.
Players had to flee. You know, some female cricketers in Afghanistan burnt their kit so that if the Taliban came round to their house, they knew that they wouldn't, that they're not involved in cricket because they weren't allowed to be. So from that point, I suppose, just for our listeners, I guess you're best placed to just try and give us a bit of a timeline as to what's happened since then, if that's all right.
Yeah. Look, I left England coming back from a Sky Sports stint and had to do, because we were still in COVID times, I had to do the 2-week hard quarantine in Sydney. And I thought to myself, what am I going to do for 2 weeks? And then I got a call from Shada Ugra, who's a journalist in India, saying, do you know any of the Afghanistan women's cricket team? And of course, being in hard quarantine, you've got nothing else much to do than read books and watch TV. So I was watching everything that was transpiring in Afghanistan at the time. I mean, it was global news. We can all remember seeing the footage of everyone just cramming into Kabul airport and all those things. And she messaged me and I said, look, you know, sadly I don't. But I also knew that there's a lot of women in Australia in the soccer football space who had been trying to get the Afghanistan women's football team out at the same time. And Charter just said, look, I've been a mentor of Banafsha and she's in Afghanistan at the moment. Would you mind if I connected you two just to see if anything can happen? I'm thinking, I really don't know what could I do sort of thing. So I remember Banafsha actually sent me a message and I sent her a voice message and I said, look, it's Mel Jones here. I'm involved in cricket. I'm on the board of Cricket Australia. I'm not too sure what I can do, but if you let me know, if you or any of the contracted players, and remembering the women that we got out were all contracted players to the Afghan Cricket Board at the time, if you want us to look into it, let me know. And Banashva sent this voice message back and she still calls me ma'am. I've got to knock that out. That's one day she says, Jonesy, I'll be really, really happy. She just said, yes, we do. Basically, we will die if we stay here. And so there was the first, my 2 weeks of quarantine. Basically, I spoke to Dr. Catherine Ordway, who is a lecturer at Canberra University and does a power of fantastic work in the sports space around integrity and the likes. And Emma Staples, who's been a great mate of mine for years and years, and we worked at Red Dust Role Models, which is a charity here in Australia that works with remote Indigenous kids. And I just turned to two women who I just knew would get it and could sort of rally troops and do all this sort of stuff. So we basically set up a backyard immigration centre, trying to work with our Australian government, getting humanitarian visas for the players. So then it was about capturing all the documentation of all these women who were hiding by this stage because they missed the window of getting out at the airport because we didn't have visas ready. So Banafsha, Zia, did a power of work in terms of getting all the documentation for, and we said immediate family. Of course, my context of immediate family is completely different to that in Afghanistan.
Yes, right. Yeah.
Initially, we had this, you know, hundreds and hundreds of names, and we're like, well, we can't get out this amount of people. Mm. And the Australian government's like, there's not a chance. And so in the end, there was 130 plus. We managed to get visas for, and that was players, family, and some administrators and coaches. And then working with people covert in Afghanistan, trying to get them to the border, to cross the Pakistan border, which then was, I felt like I was in a Jason Bourne movie.
Really?
You're sitting there and you're getting pin drops from these girls and all this stuff saying, is this the driver that I need to contact? And I'm like, I don't know, don't, not yet, hang on. And you're going back and forth. And the majority of the cohort got through within the coming months. One of the families had a torrid time getting out and was in Pakistan for quite some time. Thankfully, she and her family are now here as well. So when they arrived here in Australia, they get picked up by our Australian government. Half ended up pretty much in Canberra, half in Melbourne. And so we went from being an immigration, backyard immigration centre, then being sort of social welfare. And it was just basically from then, cricket was almost furthest from our minds then. It was just about just being a support system for these women and their families, just trying to get used to a new country, split families, the trauma, all those sorts of things, and just getting them happy that they're in Australia and seeing a little bit of hope that, you know, life's going to be okay. So it was, yeah, and that's like, that was the quickest way I could probably give it to you. Going into depths of just a huge range of emotions from us, from them, and it's that's still ongoing, as you could tell probably from my first reply.
I mean, it's an astonishing story when you look at it, and obviously it's one way to kill the boredom during a quarantine period as well. But obviously,
that and handstand. Handstand push-ups as a challenge. So,
whichever you feel is the most successful part of the quarantine. But it is an astonishing story when you think about it. And going back to that time, to the situation that's presented itself. Of course, it seems, and we will give our opinions on the matter in a few moments' time, I'm sure, Lyd, but from that perspective, it is fabulous that these women have managed to get out and find a place in Australia. It is, however, a papering over the crack in that particular instance, because they still are not allowed to play as Afghanistan. They're not allowed to play as a refugee status. They tried to apply to the ICC to play as a refugee Afghanistan team. That was actually turned down. So it obviously doesn't still mend the fact that Afghanistan cannot play. The plight for the women in Afghanistan is still ongoing, and it is getting more extreme, it would seem to me, given the, you know, news that keeps popping up about new laws and that's going on out there. Let's just go back to the cricket for a second, and then we can come on to other things. And the Greg Barclay comments about it being, what was it, hypocrisy, I think, of Australia and England, but Australia mainly, even though Richard Gould, the chief executive of the ECB, have said that they will follow Australia's stance and not play bilateral series against the Afghanistan men. Australia have taken the stance not to play bilateral series against Afghanistan. And then Greg Barclay said that was hypocrisy. That they play them against each other in world tournaments. So if they really believe in the stance, they should, you know, refuse to play them in world tournaments. What was your take on that? That was an interesting one from my perspective when I read it.
Yeah. there's a few stances I could take on this one, and I think the first one is, and I'll go back to the first comment that I made, is that there are, and predominantly it's men in powers of position at the moment that are making all these decisions, and not once have they spoken to the women that are affecting them, or to get even to try and get everyone that it's generally affecting in the room to find a solution. And I think this has been my greatest frustration and disappointment in the way in which things have panned out here, is that lack of leadership from that. It's so easy just to stand on a bit of an ivory tower and just say, that's not good enough, I don't like that, you should be better in this instance, when you don't have all complete information at your hand. And this is why I was, you know, I've been quite proud of the stance that cricket has made, because Nick Hockley, to senior execs within Cricket Australia, to the board, have all made an effort to speak to all these women. And so they've had Zoom meetings, they've gone to Melbourne, they've gone to Canberra. Olivia Thornton, the CEO of ACT Cricket, has been absolutely outstanding in this space. So many people within the cricket community, from club cricket through to, as I mentioned, Liv Thornton, the CEO, have been phenomenal, like simply outstanding, because they see that just the fact that cricket's it's a community sport. Mm. And it's a sport that we spruik over and over again about being there for people and being for everyone. So the majority of people are stepping in and going, well, this just isn't right. It doesn't pass the pub test or the water cooler test that all this is happening. And so people are saying, how can we help? What can we do? Explain to us the situation, you know, and trying to find something. And that's the piece that we just haven't seen from above. So I find it highly hypocritical. People can make those kinds of comments and not actually lean into the real conversation to begin with.
Led, we talked. What was your reaction when you saw these comments from in print in the Telegraph?
Oh, I think the emoji I sent to you was the red angry face with steam coming out of the ears.
Was it the one with the black thing across the mouth with various punctuations?
Hashtag yes.
Yeah, I mean, when I read it, there were the whole. Article and the quotes that I read from Greg Barclay, I actually was quite surprised that he has come out and said a lot of them. So one of the things that I read, which I just thought, are you serious? He said, maybe I'm a little naive, but I think cricket is such a force for good there, and it brings a lot of joy to the people. And I don't think that can be denied. But when you have, it's effectively gender apartheid. I think that's the phrase which I've read. And actually, that was one of the phrases that came to my mind. But as Mel's alluded to, because it's not affecting the people who are in the key decision-making roles, ultimately men, they have no idea of what these women are going through. I can't imagine in, you know, when South Africa were going through the horrible times that they had, that people were saying, oh, don't worry, you know, black people don't get the opportunity to play sport. But isn't it great that all these white people are bringing us joy because they're the ones who get the opportunity to play sport? Isn't it brilliant? We've still got a bit of joy to hold on to. And that was my initial reaction. I thought, how can someone say that when half of the population, now they can't even speak in public, they can't sing in their homes? It makes me annoyed, daggers. And I didn't think I would get, I'm quite a placid person, but it's, I just find the whole situation and the lack of action from the ICC. Yes, they might, there's the element of maybe being a bit scared to get involved with the Taliban, which I think I understand, but so much more could have been done to help the women who have fled their country. They could have supported Cricket Australia with what they've been doing, because Mel and the guys that she's been working with, I know, have been outstanding. But it's, yeah, a shame is a very British way of saying it.
I was just going to say that the quote was, maybe I'm a little naive, but I think cricket is such a force for good there, and it brings a lot of joy to a lot of people. It is better to leave it there and hope it can foster a bit of change. It's a real feel-good story. A sport that was played in the refugee camps 25 years ago, and now they've played in a World Cup semi-final. Do you really want to turn the tap off? Well, that's great for the men. Fantastic. Yeah, it, absolutely fantastic. But unfortunately, that's only half the story. And I don't think it is a real feel-good story. I'm sorry. And look, the Afghanistan men's team, congratulations to them. But this is not the point of any of this whatsoever. Is that the fact is, and look, don't ask me exactly, because my answer to all of this would be very simplistic. However, this is something that is so lopsided and almost, you know, we talk about cricket being a power for good and not to be and not to confuse sport and politics. And unfortunately, sometimes the two can intertwine in certain instances. And Mel, this is fine for the fellas, but you're completely ignoring. This is the game's governing body. This is the guardians of the game, and its job. Job one is to make sure it's accessible to absolutely everybody. And if it's not, to especially to a test playing nation that you have made a test playing nation, so it's highlighted even more so, then this is something that has to be taken, or you would feel that the ICC have to be a little bit stronger on, and a stance has to be taken in some shape or form.
Yeah, and particularly when the development of women and girls cricket is one of your key strategic pillars and has been for quite some time. So you sort of think, well, is it just there for a little bit of show in some way? And I know it's not. I know that there is a serious want to develop the game within this space, which is fantastic. And the game has developed, you know, across the globe in so many areas. You know, look at all the work being done in Rwanda and Uganda and in Africa for women and girls cricket. It's been outstanding all the way to Brazil. They're doing great stuff. And Thailand, it's awesome. It's absolutely brilliant. But you can't just pick and choose is the other thing to me. And so I think a lot of it still comes back to good governance, doesn't it? And so there's such a plethora of information and research done on diversity of boards. And so when the chairs of all the national bodies form the governance structure of the ICC, it's going to be a room full of 18 men. You had one independent woman in Indra Nooyi, but you don't get diversity of thought isn't one different person at a table of 18 people. You know, you need a quorum of at least, you know, a third. That's what all the research says. So when it comes to big decisions like this, you're going to get very, very similar trains of thought. And so you can't then grapple with a situation like this to what's actually needed to ensure that you get to a resolution or a solution to ensure that everyone's voices have been at the table. And so I just, we could tackle this from so many different angles. but at the end of the day, we still haven't had a conversation that I think has been fair for the women that are outside of Afghanistan at the moment. And admittedly, there's a player in England and Canada as well. But also for all the women in Afghanistan and all the men as well. Like, you know, the Afghanistan men's team, you know, they've been quite vocal recently on some of the laws about education and the like, which is fantastic.
Women's doctors as well, wasn't it? It was Rashid Khan and I think Mohammed Nabi. I will say, Mel, yes, it's great that they've been highlighting that and they've sort of tweeted out their support for them. And but all of me kind of thinks, well, that's very good, but it's kind of two or three years too late. And I know they've mentioned this other times, but it's not. I don't know. It's just something that's sort of
it's
like
hard to take us. And you know what?
I don't put myself in that position.
Yeah. To walk a day in the shoes of someone who's come through. Like, it's not just the Taliban taking over in 2021, isn't it? There is a history in that country that we will never really fully understand. You can read and research and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, to live there and go through it all is something completely different.
So,
I stop myself at times and I just say, no, I haven't walked in there. Their shoes to say that.
So
they come out and say something as they have done. I go, thanks, fellas. That's awesome. You know.
Yeah. And Mel, just so one of the other quotes, and this will hopefully lead us onto something a bit more positive, from Greg Barclay, was about Australia and what you guys have been doing over there. And he said, if you really want to make a political statement, don't play them in a World Cup. Sure, it might cost you a semi-final place, but principles are principles. It's not about having half a principle. And I think when I read that, I thought at least people are doing something, which leads me on to the game that has been organised. Obviously, ahead of the Ashes in Melbourne, where it's going to be a refugee 11, an Afghanistan refugee 11, is that right? And they're going to be playing a Cricket Without Borders side. At the, remind me which ground it's at. It's at the Junction Oval, isn't it? Yeah, so that feels like a good step in the right direction. Yeah,
it is, and I can tell you, I'm on a WhatsApp group with all the players and the organisers. Every morning I wake up, because a lot of them are still up late at night conversing with family members in Afghanistan. I wake up and there's like, it's got like 57 next to the messages that come through overnight when they're trying to decide on the logo and the colours of the uniform and the name and all those sorts of things. And there is, look, it's super exciting for the fact that they're all going to come together for the second time. We brought them all together shortly after they all landed in Australia, but they didn't play. It was just so that they could all see each other more so than that. Some of them, they've all predominantly been playing club cricket and the likes in Canberra and Melbourne. But they haven't played collectively. So the chance for them to come down to have training sessions run for them, to walk out in the uniforms and the logo that they've designed. And I think, you know, it's, I know I've said the word before, but there's a trauma attached to all these sorts of things, that, and take the cricket out of it, just the trauma of getting out and getting here and just whole new lives in a completely different country. And I'm certainly not going to say that this one instance in one game fixes all that by any stretch, but having them all together gives us also an opportunity of just touching base with them to see how we can further assist them moving forward as well. So yes, a bit about it will be about cricket, and we'll be setting up a fundraising page platform and launching that around the game so that people who do want to donate and sort of, you know, spread a little bit of cricket love, so that we can keep supporting these women. And, you know, if things do change, that we've got all these fantastic women to go back and they could be players, coaches, administrators or what have you, whatever they want to do in the world of cricket. But hopefully it gives us a chance just to see where they want to take their lives as well. But to see them all sort of walking out collectively will be, yeah, it will be a very, very special moment, day one of the Women's Ashes Test.
Yeah, and it's the other thing is as well, is it's another opportunity to highlight and spotlight what they've been going through, what they are going through, and what they're also not allowed to do, as well. You know, to keep the conversation going about what's going on, and all of that. And in an odd way, this Greg Barclay interview has brought it back into the consciousness as well. Even though what he said didn't necessarily resonate with what we think and about it, it actually has brought this conversation. This another reason we've been trying to talk to you about this for quite some time, but actually here is a good opportunity to react to what has been said. So yet again, it's been brought back into conversation. Mel, hand on heart, because I mean, like I say, I've got my opinions. I remember us doing a conversation during halftime in or one of the lunchtime sessions at a test match, and you hosted it, myself and Liz. Were you on the panel? And I think it was Jeff Lemon, myself, and Isha was there. Okay, I think Lottie might have been there as well. Actually, I think that was before. And this topic came up, and my answer was actually very, very short and sweet when it came to the Afghanistan issue. Is that you've got ICC laws, you're not upholding them. What's the point in having them in the first place? You kick them out. That is actually my stance. If you have to have as part of being a member nation, a full test playing member and having test status, etc., that brings with it a women's team. You can't provide one, then you're not part. That's just my opinion. And I think it's, at the moment, the ICC are sort of dilly-dallying a little bit. They've been, you know, they're sort of allowing, they're bending the rules to suit. And I know it's not easy, and I know there's lots of levels to it, but that's the rule. That's the rule, or else get rid of the rule. That's the other aspect to it. Yeah. Meanwhile, do you foresee a sort of end game? Is this just a constant battle? Is you know, and or is it just until we see political change in Afghanistan, this is just going to be the way it will be?
Well, we've got a change in ICC chair. It would be lovely to, you know, have a conversation with Jay Shah.
Well, we actually had this conversation last week, myself and Lydia, on the news that Jay Shah come in. Do you think bringing him in will shed a different light on this, or a different approach, perhaps?
Well, if anything, even if it's not you'd love a different light on it, but you just want to have, like I said at the start, you just want to have the conversation.
Yeah.
So if anything, and I know he's really keen on making a sort of a legacy piece of his tenure there in and around the women's game, this would be one of the fantastic positions to start at. And to say things, we might get to the same situation where the ICC still are going to sit in this position, but at least we can get in there and understand the why. We still have no real, other than the fact that they say that the ACB, Afghanistan Cricket Board, hasn't requested in any assistance, so they can't step in because it's a member nation issue. But it would be nice to think there are some exceptionally intelligent people on that ICC board and around international cricket. To think that all those people on that board and in and around the world game can't collectively come together and find something that fits the growth of the men's game and the women's game, whether the women's game's outside or inside at the moment, that baffles me. So that's what I would say. It's an open invitation at the moment. I'm more than happy to chat.
Mel Jones talking to us earlier this morning, and great to hear from her. It's so interesting to get the thoughts of her, who is so intricately involved in this situation and knows a hell of a lot more about it than probably we do. We will hear from Mel in a subsequent podcast about more cricket-related matters, the WBBL, Australian International Cricket as well. But Lids, I mean, we know this because we spend so much time with her, but she talks a hell of a lot of sense. And, you know, it's great to get her views on what is a very, very difficult situation in the women's game.
Yeah, it is. And I think the way that she and other people that she mentioned in that chat, along with the Australian Cricket Board, I think they've set a really good example of what can be done, regardless of what, you know, the main governing body has or hasn't done. What I took from Mel was that we can moan all we want about this topic, but if nothing's done, then nothing's going to change. And so I think I mentioned it at the end there, is actually, you know, boards around the world can learn a lot from Cricket Australia, I think. There's a player here in England, and I've had a chat with a few people about how she's been progressing. I think she had quite a bumpy ride at the start of her arrival, but has since got some really good support. But yeah, governing bodies, you can learn a lot, and you can perhaps ask some questions as to what Cricket Australia have done and how they might be able to support either players in their countries or support Cricket Australia in what they're doing. But you're right, she does talk a lot of sense. And yeah, it's a topic which we could speak so much about, isn't it, as well?
It really is. And all we can do is hope and pray that there is a resolution. What that resolution is, I mean, you know, goodness only knows. Until there is, I imagine, until there is a change in government, or I don't know how it was before. That seems like it's the only option, and that doesn't look like it's going to come anytime soon. So this will continue to fester. And I say fester because this is, I mentioned this a little bit earlier, I just find this totally wrong and against all principles of human rights. I'm getting into areas that I don't know, but it just is so frustrating. I get so frustrated because of our viewpoint of the game. It is a game. It is a sport. Anyone should be allowed to do whatever they want. And we are not allowed to play a game that we love and feel so passionately about. It really upsets not just me, but not just you, but I'm sure listeners and viewers on this podcast. We hope for a resolution. I'm not confident that there will be one, but we thank Mel Jones for her contribution to this particular podcast. Just a reminder that we will be talking about the women's game on the field in our next edition of the podcast. It will be coming out in around about 3 or 4 days' time. We will wrap up Australia versus India, England versus South Africa, and Ireland's wonderful T20 performance against Bangladesh. But for now, thank you so much for listening and watching, and we'll be back in around about a week's time. Thank you.